Hello and welcome to the Rails Envy podcast. I'm Jason Seifer.
And I'm Greg Pollack.
And this is episode 73, April 1st, 2009. The Rails Envy podcast is sponsored this week by Integrum.
Integrum is a team of dedicated Rails developers who emphasize business value, speed to market, and open communication to build remarkable Rails applications.
Nice alliteration. Check them out at integrumtech.com.
Hey, Jason, I just realized something.
What?
You're here in the same room with me.
How can you tell?
Because you're like,
because I've got that uncomfortable feeling.
Some of you may not know, Jason is usually down in Fort Lauderdale, so we record the podcast separately.
You probably can't tell because of how awesome we
Jason
are.
Is with editing the podcast. You're awesome, Jason. We thought we'd start out the podcast with 10 cool things in Rails 2.3, thanks to Luke Frankel.
Over on the Rails Spikes blog.
Number one.
Rails boots faster, now in development mode. This is because Rails now lazy loads as much as possible, so that when you start up in development mode, it just loads things as you need them.
Number two.
Rails engines are now officially supported. This was inspired by Merb Slices, and it's actually kind of good to see because, engines were kind of frowned upon in the past, so now just go engine crazy.
Number three.
There's some new routing improvements. RESTful routes now uses less memory because the formatted routes are no longer generated, and this results in a 50% memory savings.
Yeah, so basically if you want to access the XML or JSON format, you basically just pass in a format key with your link to.
Number four.
JSON improvements. And you guys thought Jason couldn't get any better.
Well, he's just so much better here in person.
Yeah, I know. So now the toJSON method will now always quote keys per the JSON spec, and escaped Unicode characters will now be unescaped.
Number five.
Default scopes. We've talked about this before in the podcast. Basically, in your active record models, you can specify default conditions or a default order. So whenever you do like post.all, it'll have default conditions. Makes sense.
Number six.
Nested transactions. If you pass requires new true to active record base.transaction, a nested transaction is going to be created.
Number seven.
You can now have asset host objects. This allows you to configure your asset hosts, for style sheets and images hosted on a separate server, and this allows you to configure it easier.
Number eight.
Easily update Rails timestamp fields. I actually never had a problem with updating the created at or updated at.
Yeah, neither did I.
I don't remember that I ever tried. Anyway, moving on.
Number nine.
Nested attributes and forms.
We've talked about this before. Again,
basically
you can
to
have...
death. We've talked about this to death. You can have nested attributes.
Like you can have a single form which updates multiple models at the same time.
Like if it has a has-many association.
Exactly.
And
number 10.
Rails metal. Basically, rack endpoints for your Rails app. Rails can scale if you don't have the Rails.
And that's all 10 of cool things you can find in Rails 2.3, although there's a lot more cooler things. You just need to check out the release notes.
You don't even need to check out Luke Frankel's blog post now that we summed it all up for you. You can thank us later, Luke. Steven Sellis released the Haddock gem. And what Haddock does is it basically lets you, it kind of recreates OS X's built-in password generation feature, so you can kind of generate memorable yet secure passwords. It's going to basically use two words separated with a number or a symbol.
Okay. Well, doesn't 1Password do this for you?
Yeah, 1Password does, but this is a Ruby library to do the same thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you get a command line utility and a library for it. The other nice thing about it is you can actually pass in your own words file and dictionary to it also.
Nice. If you're using Rails 2.3 and you want to take a closer look at how your Rails application is using memory, you may want to take a look at Scrap, created last week by Chris Heald.
So how does it work?
Well, Chris wanted to see his memory stats for his application in production, but printing to the typical Rails log file, is unreadable because of everything printing out to there. He realized that creating some rack middleware would allow him to very easily log where memory is being used in Rails.
Well, that's interesting. So it's kind of going to show you which objects are hogging memory so you can optimize your Rails app?
Exactly. And it's in your production app. So you can go to the URL stats/scrap in production and get instant visibility into what your memory footprint looks like.
Nice. So if you find yourself wanting to switch a lot between different Git branches on your Rails app, and, let's say you've had a few migrations on a certain branch, well, this week, Matt Brown put up a rake task to do something called rollback to common and then give it a Git branch to go back to. So it's going to keep track of which migrations have been run since you switched the branch and then go right back after you check out the original branch.
Oh, that makes sense, because I might go off in a certain branch that I have to add additional database fields for, but then I want to maybe go back to the master branch, which won't have those migrations, so it'll roll back my database all for me?
Yes, exactly.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. Find the link in the show notes. That's good. It's like a little harmony there. Really.
Okay, try again.
Find the link in the show notes.
Two weeks ago, I was lucky enough to get out to South by Southwest and see Mike Sabelski's talk on scaling Rails in the cloud. And recently, Mike posted up the slides and the audio for his talk.
Oh, yeah. You know, I totally agree. If you think it can scale, then you definitely have your head in the clouds. Oh!
Mike works for Other Inbox, and his talk goes over how they set up their infrastructure using Amazon Web Services. It's definitely worth a listen if you're thinking about deploying your application in the cloud. He goes into detail about how they set up their infrastructure and solve problems they ran into.
You know, this reminds me of a song.
Somewhere over the rainbow,
Rails can scale. Rails. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be here all evening.
That was well done, man. You really outdid yourself.
Thank you very much.
So a few months back, Greg and I were working on a project where we had to use shared models and controllers and a few other things between a few different applications.
Right. So we ended up creating a shared directory in our Rails root, which had its own model directory and test directory, if I remember correctly.
Right. And this week, Intridia documented pretty much exactly what we did, along with showing how to use a Git sub module so that both apps can point to a shared Git repository.
How nice of them, you know, to document our work.
Yeah, I know. If we were the RIAA, we might be a little bit less kind. Anyway, it was actually their work, but it's a great guide if you find yourself needing to share code between two different Rails apps.
Yeah, but I really hate sub modules. I just want to put that out there.
I never understood why.
Sub modules killed my father.
Okay, that makes sense.
No, but really, I don't know if it's still a valid claim, but I remember that every time I pull the root application, like do a git pull, whatever branch my submodule was on would get like thrown off into like an empty branch, like a nothing branch. And if I then went and changed the submodule code, I'd have to remember that I was on no branch at all and then like pop it back onto a branch or create my own branch.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's a solution to this. Maybe somebody out there knows one.
Cool. Well, if you do, drop us a line in the show notes.
Yeah. So we've talked before about Heroku.
The guys that do the in-browser code editor and are now offering a scalable hosting solution.
That's not in the clouds.
Right.
Over the rainbow. Right. And the one thing that they do that may make any developer cringe a little bit is, of course, they don't give you shell access on your server.
Cringing right now.
However, they have many features which make this a lot less painless than you might imagine, including a new feature they rolled out last week, which allows you to easily pull down your database from your Heroku server.
So what do they do?
Well, they ended up writing a library called Taps, which anybody can use to quickly pull a remote database and push the data onto a local database. What's cool about Taps is that it uses a standard Ruby schema file for the database structure and SQL, that's SEQUEL, for the data. What this means is that you can easily transfer data between any different database libraries.
Oh, nice. So I could be running MySQL on my production server in SQLite locally, kind of like normal.
Exactly.
And this is just for Heroku servers?
Well, actually, Taps is a gem you can use separately from Heroku on anything. But if you're using Heroku, it's pretty much built in. To pull down your DB, all you have to run is the Heroku DB pull rake task on your Heroku app, and it just syncs it up for you.
If you like watching screencasts, and who doesn't, you might want to check out the new Ruby screencast over at technical.com. That's TEKNIKQAL. They serve as a great resource for beginners or people who just really want to get a little bit more familiar with the Ruby language.
And what sort of topics are covered?
So far, there are 10 screencasts up, and the most recent two cover symbols in Ruby and strings and mutability in Ruby.
Nice. Jason, what exactly is mutability?
That's what gives the X-Men their powers, I believe.
Did you mean mutant ability?
No. Mutability.
Mutability.
That's why Wolverine has those claws.
And what's your superpower?
I have the uncanny ability to create a really awkward situation.
Awkward, kind of like what you told me about earlier with pregnancy and your fiance.
I told her I wanted to have 8 kids. Not because I actually wanted to have 8 kids, but because I wanted to see her go through the pain of childbirth 8 times. Is that wrong? Should that not come up in a serious talk about having kids? No, but kids are great if you don't have them.
So there you are programming your Rails app, and you sit there refreshing your browser, wondering why your changes aren't showing up. Then it hits you. You've been refreshing the production site, not your local development server.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, I've definitely been there. Luckily, we've got a new plugin you can use to cure this, which gives you a nice little panel at the top of your browser, which lets you know with your development mode and a couple other statistics, and it's called CK space FU. CK space FU.
Huh. Like Calvin Klein.
Like if you rearrange that, you'll find the word that you typically say when you've realized that you've been refreshing your production server and nothing's been changing.
Cuff.
Exactly.
Right. Moving on. This week, Dr. Nick, who I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but he is a real doctor, showed us how to test outgoing emails with Cucumber.
You know, if I didn't know you were talking about Ruby, that might be a very weird thing to say.
What, testing outbound with Cucumber?
Before I mailed my rent check today, I took the envelope and used a juicy cucumber to make sure it was sealed.
Well, that is what the doctor prescribed. That's what Dr. Nick said to do. Dr. Nick blogged about a plugin this week from Ben Maybe called Email Spec that gives you the ability to say cucumber steps like, you know, the following. Then I should receive an email, when I open the email, and when I click the first link in the email.
Oh, nice. I guess that would be useful if you wanted to make sure activation email was working.
Right.
So maybe you've got a blog and you allow your users to post comments on the blog, but you want to take it one step further. You definitely don't want them to post HTML, but if they post a link, you'll maybe want to linkify it, and maybe if they post a photo or video, you want to actually embed the photo or the video. So how do you do this without HTML?
Basically, you want them to only be able to embed links to the video.
Right, so the code could auto-discover what they're linked to based on the URL. And this week,
Dejan Simic.
That's definitely not it. Dejan Simic already wrote the code for this, and he published it in an easy-to-use plugin called AutoHTML. And there's a really great demo of this plugin in action if you want to give it a try.
So basically, it'll take a video URL, for instance, and give you a standard embed code for it?
Not only that, but you can specify the dimensions that all videos and all photos get on your website, so they all appear the same size.
Oh, that's great. If you're looking for a good Rails code syntax highlighter, this week Michael Edgar released a library called Harsh, which not only supports typical Ruby code, but also Haml and Erb. Also, it has some really crazy cutdowns.
Cutdowns?
Yeah, like that was way harsh.
If you're using Twitter, odds are you've posted a good share of URLs to it. Have you ever wished you could then go back into Twitter and pull a list of all of the links you've posted?
Actually, no. All the f***ing time.
Kind of like how you test.
Right.
Anyways, Alex Miller wrote a fun little Ruby script to do just this. He walks through how to use the Twitter search API, which is very easy to use.
If you haven't yet experienced Ruby 1.9 support for multiple character encodings, James Edward Gray wrote up a great article this week which walks through this new feature. Also, you should probably follow James Edward Gray on Twitter, speaking of Twitter. And you should follow us on Twitter.
Definitely.
Jay Cipher and Greg Pollock. Separate accounts, not like one awkward family account like Jay Cipher and Greg Pollock at Twitter. Sorry.
But whatever you do, do not recommend us on working with Rails.
But you know what, though? Kind of saying it, that's sort of like saying, don't think of a pink elephant. What's the first thing you think of when I say that?
Oh, man.
Don't send us a bunch of money.
Don't scale Rails?
Not an issue.
We mentioned a few weeks ago Gregory Brown's book in progress, Ruby Best Practices. And this week, Gregory announced that he's looking to start a collaborative
It's Chinese.
Collaborative Brog at rubybestpractices.com, and he's looking for authors. So if you have something to say about Ruby best practices and you want to help create what could be a popular blog in the Ruby space, definitely check it out.
Have you tried the Rails searchable API doc from Vladimir Kolesnikov?
No, but isn't there other ways you can have searchable docs, like on your local server,
yeah,
gem server?
Like gems.local?
Yeah.
We talked about last week. Well, yeah, but what's cool about this is that it's just a downloadable package. So you click on the index.html and you're all set. You don't really have to worry about any server running. You just download the newest Rails 2.3 package, make a shortcut to the index.html file. Pretty clean and simple.
We all know that there's a few gems and libraries out there which are not Ruby 1.9 compatible.
Nothing is compatible.
And this week I found myself on ruby19orbus.com, where Rob Kaufman is requesting some donations so that he can work on fixing incompatible libraries.
Kind of like the Ruby Mendicant project, right?
Yeah, but this is for making, you know, gems and libraries compatible with Ruby 1.9.
Well, that's cool. I'd definitely be willing to throw in a few bucks for that. So, Greg, do you remember Authgasm?
No, Jason. What's that? Why don't you remind me what Authgasm is?
I can't do it with a straight face. That's why. Okay, take two. Hey, Greg, you remember Authgasm, right?
No, I don't remember. Jason, could you remind me?
I can't do it. So, Greg, you remember Authgasm, right?
I don't remember, Jason. Could you remind me what it's like? I mean, I've been faking security for all this time.
Questioningly, Authgasm was authentication for Ruby on Rails that kept the Gasm separate from the rest of your Rails app, so you could do authentication just like a user model.
So your security wouldn't gasm all over the place?
So eventually it got renamed to AuthLogic, and this is by Ben Johnson. It's over on the Binary Logic blog. Anyway, just want to let you guys know that AuthLogic 2.0 is out. It's got OpenID and a bunch of other stuff. So check out the show notes for a link to it, and you can read all about what's new. I know a lot of people use it too.
And how easy is OpenID with AuthLogic 2.0?
Well, as he says on his blog, it's so easy you might think it's from New Jersey. The Rails Heavy Podcast is sponsored this week by New Relic. You write good code, but things can happen. So how fast can you spot Rails performance problems and their root causes? Don't rely on your log files. Check out New Relic RPM at newrelic.com. Thanks again for listening to the Rails Heavy Podcast. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday for the latest news in the Ruby and Rails worlds.
If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow.